In 2004, after several months as an interrogator, Eric Fair's call to serve his country led him to a dark and frightening place. By the time he left Iraq after that first deployment, he participated in or witnessed a variety of aggressive interrogation techniques, including sleep deprivation, stress positions, diet manipulation, exposure, and isolation. Years later, with his health and marriage crumbling, he decided to write about it as a key to his survival. He does so in his memoir, Consequence. It is published by Picador. Eric Fair will be at the New York State Writers Institute. He will be holding a seminar in the Uptown campus of the University at Albany at 4:15 and will be holding a reading at 8 p.m. at the Clark Auditorium at the New York State Museum. Again, the name of the book is Consequence, a memoir, and we welcome Eric Fair to the roundtable this morning. Eric, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it as well.
You will be doing a seminar on Thursday at the New York State Writers Institute on the Uptown campus of SUNY Albany, a seminar at 4:15, a reading at 8 o'clock. Tell us a little bit about the decision to want to tell your story and recounting the experiences of working in Iraq as an interrogator.
Yeah, so the question about why I wanted to tell the story or why I wanted to write is one I've struggled with really from the beginning. I started back in 2006 with some opinion pieces and personal essays for the local newspaper, and that eventually evolved into a piece for the Washington Post. And if I'm being honest, I would say I regretted it almost every day. It wasn't a story I wanted to tell. I would have preferred to continue my career in the intelligence community. And then eventually, once the idea of the book came to being, it was that same sort of feeling. And so I've struggled to explain that. And I think I came across a quote by Heinemann, who had won the National Book Award a few years back, and he'd written about Vietnam. And people had asked him the same question about why he would want to write about Vietnam. And I can't use the exact language on this show, but you know, he'd said it would be simple, or it was more polite than a simple "fu." And that this issue of good taste is one of the things that had kept the war going for so long. So the book is unpleasant. It's not pleasant to read. I didn't like to write it, and I know a lot of people don't like to read it. But it's time that we start having an honest conversation about what the wars look like and what they feel like, and what we've begun to call the forever wars, which is, I think, an accurate description.
Basically, and I know we will struggle a little bit in this terms of definition, but what we have come to know now is enhanced interrogation. This is what you were doing.
Yes, yeah, it was the early days of what was then being called the Enhanced Interrogation Program, which I think we all now know to have been torture. But yeah, this was I arrived at Abu Ghraib in early 2004, and then returned for a second tour in 2005. So again, these were before I think the term was even common knowledge in the United States, the enhanced program was being implemented where I was in Iraq.
You write about in the book, as the title suggests, consequence, and that is the consequences are many, but let us talk about the personal effect that this has on you. Were you always questioning what you were doing and that okay, I'm doing my job? But at what point does it start to say, okay, but this isn't right?
Well, the questions about right and wrong started from the beginning, and I would hope that any soldier or anyone involved in a war is immediately asking those questions. And so the issue of Abu Ghraib and interrogation and the prisoners, it was instant. But it was a question of morally right and wrong, which can be a gray area and should be a gray area in war. But there were never questions about legality. This was not, again, something we were doing behind closed doors. This is not something that we were afraid someone was going to find out about and we'd be prosecuted for. We were filing paperwork. We were following directions. And so this was part of the program. And so it was difficult. And I'm not making excuses here. And I know even as I say the words, that's what it sounds like. But it was difficult to immediately step out and suggest that this stuff was wrong and we weren't going to do it. We felt an obligation. I had supported the invasion of Iraq in 2003. And because I supported the invasion, I felt an absolute obligation to be a part of it, as I think most Americans should have. And when I got there, it was difficult to speak out against this stuff. And it took me years to process it and come to the conclusions that I have.
How much of what you did was under order, under direct order, or what you felt individually and as a group of what needed to be done to get the information that you were tasked to get?
Yeah, this is another common question, the issue of orders. And I think the reason it's asked a lot is Americans' lack of experience with the military and how few have served. And this idea that this is how orders work, the idea that that you show up at a place and wait to be told exactly what to do is exactly how the military does not work. Orders, there are what are known as standing orders, and a unit operates on those standing orders. When you arrive in that unit, you're expected to assess the way things are going on and to get in line. So there was not anyone standing over my shoulder saying, use sleep deprivation or use facial slaps or use diet manipulation. These were procedures that were in place, and the expectation was that I was to use them to full effect to complete the mission.
I don't mean to make this sound mechanical, because obviously one of the points in the book is to make this human and to understand what's happening. But so in other words, you have these abilities in your utility belt, if you will, that you can use to get the information that you need to get, right?
That's right. Yeah, and the expectation was that you were to And it's probably worth talking about what was going on in Iraq at the time. So
right.
When I arrived in early 04, this debate about chemical weapons was beginning to shift, and it was becoming more and more apparent that there were likely not chemical weapons, or at least not chemical weapons on the scale that we had been told that there would be. But this insurgency was beginning. Saddam Hussein had been captured in December, and we thought, and I think most thought, that would be the end of the war. But it wasn't ending. It was, in fact, it was getting worse, quite frankly. And so there was a great deal of frustration throughout all levels of the government and all levels of the military about why it was happening and how it could be stopped. And so these were the kind of things that were then pushed down to interrogators like me about finding out what this was about. So trying to decide, was this a Sunni-fueled insurgency? Was it Shia-fueled? Were the two working together? Were they opposed? Who was the Ba'ath Party? Where had the Ba'ath Party gone? So the questions were endless. And it was incredibly frustrating and just nearly an impossible task. And so with something like enhanced interrogation in place, the less the prisoners cooperated, the more these techniques were implemented.
I do want to go back to this question of orders. I certainly understand what you were saying and how that can be confused. But you are given a task, right? I mean, you have a boss that you are answering to and information that you are required to get and hopefully a project that you are supposed to complete and comply with, correct?
Sure. Yes, you're placed on a team. And that my team at the time was what was known as FREs, former regime elements. And you are tasked with gaining a specific kind of intelligence. It was listed as what were known as PIRs, priority intelligence requirements. And it went down a very long list of PIRs, and that, it started, quite frankly, with chemical weapons, the location of chemical weapons. But once you moved past that and determined that the prisoner didn't have that information, you looked for the next PIR. It may go all the way down to intelligence on a specific intersection in a certain town like Fallujah or Ramadi. And so, yes, there were orders in terms of, or there were directives in terms of what kind of information to get, and the specifics of what you were looking for. But I want to be careful about suggesting that we weren't, and this is where I'm accusing myself again, that we weren't responsible for our own actions. It was not as if I can't just heap all of this, and no other interrogator can heap all of this onto the shoulders of someone else. We made these decisions on our own. But that also indicts America. America allowed us to have these types of powers, and when they saw photos of what these powers looked like, it wasn't until then that I think they recoiled in the way that they did.
When it comes to the consequences, and when it comes to how this impacts your life when you come back, would things have been different if you were not a private contractor? Would that change anything?
No, I don't think it would have, and I think there's some evidence of that. There's a book called Fear Up Harsh by Tony Lagarenas, and Tony and I have been in touch, and he was an Army interrogator there at the same time that I was. In fact, even at Abu Ghraib briefly, although he spent most of his time outside of Abu Ghraib. And his story is similar in terms of some of the guilt and some of the frustration about what went on. And I remain convinced, and I don't have evidence of this other than just about every previous war that has ever been fought, that In time, more interrogators and more people involved in the detention program and in the war in general are going to be speaking about the kind of, the sort of things that you suffer based on this type of behavior.
When it comes to that suffering, how did it manifest itself in your life and returning back home and trying to put all of this into context? And I assume a regular reminder and a horror of what you did to other human beings.
Well, it was one of the very disturbing and strange things, one of the many very disturbing and strange things about modern war is just how quickly you can get home from a battlefield or from a place like Abu Ghraib. So I don't remember exactly what day I left, but I very well could have left on a Monday, flown out of Baghdad, and been back home in Bethlehem on a Wednesday or Thursday afternoon, to the point where you literally, and I'm not trying to be dramatic here, but you could have still had dirt under your fingernails from Iraq. So trying to make the adjustment that quickly from one day being in an interrogation booth and to just a few days later being at home with your wife in Bethlehem and going to the farmer's market and worrying about shopping lists is, at least for me, it was an impossible task. And so much of the, you could get through a day but and do basic, get through your basic day, but it was an illusion. The kind of emotions that were still underneath, a mixture of anger and fear, were really difficult to process, and they manifested themselves in horrible ways. And whether that was, whether it was abusing alcohol the way that I did, or eventually, considering suicide, it was, and in some ways remains impossible to process those things in a healthy way.
I was going to ask about that issue of it remaining. I mean, there's a certain element of this that you never get over.
No, and I don't think you should.
Right.
I don't think you should have this kind of experience and either be guilty of this or just have done the things that are required in war and be able to adjust. And I think this is something that Americans need to face as we continue to talk about this continuous war in the Middle East or throughout the world, that in places where it may be necessary, and it might, I'm not a pacifist, I'm not suggesting that all military intervention is unjustifiable, but there will be consequences. And this is, again, why the book is called Consequence, because in any discussion about this kind of thing, the word consequence just continues to come to the surface. So, yes, maybe we do need to deploy troops again, but we need to do so knowing and admitting that they will not come back unbroken.
Eric Fair is the author of the book Consequence, a memoir. It is published by Picador. He will be at the Campus Center for a seminar at the Uptown campus of the University at Albany, and then we'll be holding a reading on Thursday night at 8 o'clock at the Clark Auditorium at the New York State Museum downtown in Albany. You can find out more information about all of these events by going to the New York State Writers Institute page online and also to our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Eric Fair, thank you very much for joining us. A pleasure to have you on the program, and we look forward to having you in town.
Yeah, thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Consequence, a Memoir. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.